From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now! Petroleum, politics, and power. Democracy Now! Confronts Chevron CEO Ken Durr on his company's involvement in the killing of activists in the Niger Delta, asking him, would Chevron call on the Nigerian military to stop shooting protesters? His answer, no. Also, the UWA people of Colombia face off with Occidental Petroleum's board of directors in Los Angeles, threatening once again to commit mass suicide if the oil giant drills on their ancestral land. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. NATO missiles pummeled an airport in Montenegro today in the strongest attacks yet on that Yugoslav republic. This according to state media. Refugees fleeing Kosovo told of seeing the piled bodies of men who'd been detained by President Slobodan Milosevic's security forces. As NATO bombed Yugoslav targets for the 37th day, former Russian Prime Minister Viktor Chernomyrdin flew to Germany for talks to resolve the crisis over Kosovo. Chernomyrdin said he would present concrete proposals in Bonn, Rome, and Belgrade in a two-day diplomatic swing, but added that the key precondition for peace was a halt to the NATO airstrikes. And in a new sign of defiance, Yugoslavia filed world court cases against 10 alliance members today, claiming their bombing campaign breaches international law. NATO struck the Montenegrin capital of Podgorica with some 40 missiles early today, sending flames spiraling into the night sky. Radar sites and army planes were struck. Meanwhile, there are more reports of civilian deaths after a NATO strike. This time, sources say a missile attack on a southern Kosovo city killed at least 4 people, including 2 children. Elsewhere, reports say NATO missiles destroyed a bridge in southeastern Serbia, also cutting telephone links. And in Washington, the House has shown President Clinton it does not endorse NATO's bombing campaign in Yugoslavia. House members rejected a measure last night to support airstrikes. Still, Clinton says the campaign could last at least another 3 months. Investigators expect an arrest within 48 hours in the Colorado school shootings. District Attorney Dave Thomas says he expects a man to surrender for allegedly selling a semi-automatic handgun to the 2 teen killers. It's illegal to sell such weapons to minors. The Denver Post says federal agents tracing the gun showed up Tuesday at a pizza shop where Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold once worked. The report says a delivery driver there may have introduced the teenagers to the gun seller. Meanwhile, state senators in Florida and North Carolina shelve bills banning class action lawsuits against lawmakers, saying debate would be unseemly after the shooting at Columbine High School. And House lawmakers in North Carolina and South Carolina approved similar measures. In Florida, the bill appeared headed for passage before the massacre in Littleton, Colorado. The Florida House canceled debate on the bill last week. Cincinnati has become the latest city to sue gun manufacturers in an attempt to recover damages for crimes involving firearms. The city council on Wednesday voted 5-4 to file a lawsuit that will seek millions of dollars in damages from handgun manufacturers for alleged expenses stemming from gun violence. The suit is similar to those filed by officials in Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago, Miami, Detroit, and other cities. This news from Peru. Tens of thousands of protesters marched in cities across Peru yesterday, and a 24-hour work stoppage partially shut down traffic and business in the first national strike against President Alberto Fujimori during his 9 years in power. Strikers stoned buses and marchers carried signs denouncing Fujimori as a dictator and protesting policies they charge have trampled Peru's democratic institutions and brought poverty to all but a few. Fujimori called strike organizers communists and ordered 20,000 policemen to patrol the streets. 5 people were reported injured, 67 arrested in Lima during the strike. This news from Gaza City. The Palestinian leadership voted overwhelmingly to delay a decision on statehood until after Israel's May 17th election. The vote came on the third day of debate by the PLO's Central Council on whether to declare statehood May 4th, the date marked by Oslo Accords as the end of the five-year autonomy period, or extend peace talks with Israel. From Trenton, New Jersey State Police deny that race plays a part in a crime-fighting operation in which motel employees are recruited to be on the lookout for suspicious guests. The new 9-year-old effort to stop drug shipments is under review by the state attorney general's office to determine whether it unfairly targets minorities. According to a report in the Star-Ledger of Newark, police investigators told hotel desk clerks to pay particular attention to Hispanics from Florida who carry lots of cash. It's time to yap. Yeah. And salute those people. Yeah. Then be a yappy people. Yeah. Then be a mumbo people. Yeah. Woman can't stand. Yeah. Him said them call them like that. Them be my people. Yeah, 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 yeah. Before you know, commotion don't start. Big trouble, big argument. Big fights, big everything. Commotion they go, commotion they come. Fight they start, fight they stop. Trouble they turn round and round. Before conductor convex. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Well, tonight the Project Censored Awards will be taking place in New York, honoring some of the most censored stories of the past year. And among those selected is Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Oil Dictatorship. That's Democracy Now!'s expose on the role that the California oil giant Chevron played in the killing of two Nigerian activists last May 28th. Well, yesterday, I went out to San Ramon, California, to the headquarters of Chevron. There, I attended the company's annual shareholders meeting, holding a proxy given to me by the Ursuline Sisters of Tildunk, a group of religious sisters. By having that proxy, I had a chance to question the head of Chevron, Ken Durr, about his company's involvement in the killing of activists in the Niger Delta. Now, before I play the question and the answer, which, by the way, you'll have to listen to carefully, let me set the scene for you. Shareholders meetings, annual shareholder meetings, are taking place around the country this week. And for the rest of the show, you're going to hear about some of those. You'll hear about some of the shareholder resolutions that were raised at Chevron's shareholder meeting in San Ramon, at their headquarters. And in the last part of the show, we're going to be talking to the UWA people of Colombia, who are in Los Angeles to attend Occidental Petroleum's annual shareholder meeting. And we'll talk about this form of activism, of going to shareholder annual meetings, raising issues and speaking in support of socially conscious resolutions. But it's often tough to get into these meetings. I got this tape yesterday of the meeting. And I should say, if you didn't hear this, you wouldn't get a chance to hear this because, as is the case with many corporations, they don't publish the actual transcript of the whole meeting where people raise concerns about the corporation. They'll often just print the transcripts of the speeches of their corporate executives. But this is a rare opportunity to get, I guess you could say, an oral glimpse into one of these meetings. Again, listen very carefully. This is not what you'd consider broadcast quality, but it is a recording of what happened yesterday at the Chevron meeting. My chance to question the Chevron CEO, Ken Durr.
I'm here on the proxy of the Ursuline Sisters of Tildunk, holders of 2,500 shares of stock. I'm Amy Goodman, and they're very concerned about the expose I did on Chevron's involvement in the killing of two Nigerian activists last May 28th at the Barabe platform in the Niger Delta in Nigeria. On that day, dozens of community activists had occupied the platform, concerned about the impoverished region. And Chevron's spokesperson admitted to me that Chevron authorized the military, the Nigerian military, to come in, and Chevron actually flew in the notorious Navy and mobile police known as the Kilingo. They killed two of the Nigerian villagers and critically wounded the third. A number of the other protesters were put in jail. At least one was tortured. My question to you, Mr. Durr, is severalfold. One, has Chevron protested to the Nigerian military what they did? Have you called on the U.S. Embassy to protest this? Will you change your policy of bringing the Nigerian military in to deal with protesters, knowing that they kill people? Will you be reexamining your own policies, given the killings last May 28th, which, by the way, this last January 4th, another incident occurred where Chevron flew in the military once again to another area, and the military killed at least four Nigerian villagers?
Question asked at yesterday's Chevron shareholders meeting. And then Ken Durr responded. He started by talking about Chevron's general policies in Nigeria and also the fact that the very poor of the Niger Delta often turn to the oil corporations for compensation because they don't have other institutions to turn to. And then he directly addressed the issue of last May 28th and what happened at the Parabe platform, Chevron's offshore drilling site off of Elijah Land, which is a couple miles into the sea, and he addressed the question.
300 or so youth physically took over a Chevron platform. They held Chevron employees hostage for 3 days, threatening them with bodily harm, with all kinds of other possibilities. We negotiated, our local people negotiated with these, what I would call terrorist members, for 3 days, several times, reached agreement that they would leave, and each time they broke the agreement. Now put yourself in the position of having 100 or so of your employees held hostage for 3 days with a bunch of youths armed with fire irons, etc., etc. At some point, you decide you have to act, and that's what we do. We called the authorities. The authorities moved in. We did not, and this for the record, we did not fly anybody in for the Caribbean platform. We did not fly anybody in the other. We don't own any helicopters in Nigeria.
Mr. Durr, your own spokesperson said that you flew them in Chevron leased helicopters. That's been documented. That's not contested.
I let you speak now if you let me speak. The helicopters are owned by the joint venture, which we operate in, which is owned 60% by the Nigerian government. When the Nigerian government, the majority owner in a venture, asked you to use your helicopters, it's very difficult to say no. We called the authorities, they went in. Unfortunately, there was an incident and two people were killed. We have expressed great concern to the families. We've expressed concern to the government. We've also expressed great concern to our own employees who spent 3 days of being held hostage. I think what we did, we had to do. If it had been one of your sons or daughters, I think, who had been a hostage on that platform, we heard from a lot of people whose sons or daughters were being held hostage. The authorities went in. They tried to do it peacefully. The people who occupied the platform started swinging, etc., and unfortunately, there were two deaths. I am sorry this all happened, but I think it is unfortunate that the people who instigated the incident held our employees hostage for 3 days, had to act in a way in which they did. I think the important thing in Nigeria right now is what Dave mentioned. There has been three elections. We have a new president about to be inaugurated in this month, in the next month. This is the only military ruler, dictator ruler, who turned over the government to freely democratic elections over 10 years ago. We actually had meetings with him not very long ago when he was in the States. He understands the problem. He understands that the government has to do something to help these people. Until that happens, I think it will under this new regime, I think we'll see a significant change in Nigeria. But I would reiterate that Chevron, and I'm proud of how our employees react to this situation. This was a very, very difficult situation for everyone.
Mr. Durr, have you
ever... Can I go to the next question? And then we'll
just a quick follow-up. Have you ever asked for the Nigerian military not to shoot protesters? Will you, Chevron, stop flying the Nigerian military in? Your own spokesperson said that the protesters were unarmed, number one.
They were not unarmed. They had sticks, they had tire irons, they had all kinds of things to which they were threatening our employees.
Well, your own spokesperson said they were unarmed.
We do not fly the military in because they're not our helicopters. And to have to ask somebody to not shoot protesters, I think, is a little naive. Obviously, we don't want anybody to be shot.
But have you officially demanded that they not shoot protesters on your site?
I don't know if we've officially demanded it, but I think it goes without saying that nobody...
Will you officially demand it?
No. I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay, next question, please.
And that was Chevron CEO Ken Durr responding to the question of whether Chevron would demand of the Nigerian military not to shoot protesters on their sites in Nigeria. And you heard the stunning response of Ken Durr, no. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with the program today and what has happened at that Chevron shareholders meeting. Before we go to some of the resolutions that were addressed, and they dealt with the issue of the local community like Richmond, where there was a major explosion just a few weeks ago at a Chevron refinery, their shareholder resolution calling for Chevron to release all information on toxic substances they use, as well as a resolution calling for Chevron to withdraw from the Global Climate Coalition, which is an industry coalition that has been fighting against any support of the Kyoto Protocol. We're going to first hear from one of the leaders of the shareholder resolution movement and what this is all about, why people like the UWA are headed in Los Angeles to confront the board of directors of Occidental Petroleum tomorrow, and we'll be speaking with them later in the show, what happened at General Electric just a few weeks ago, what this whole movement is about.
I'm Pat Daly. I'm a Dominican sister of Caldwell, New Jersey, and I direct a coalition of religious investors in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut area, the Tri-State Coalition for Responsible Investment. And we're members of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility.
Before we go in specifically to what happened at today's shareholder meeting of Chevron in San Ramon headquarters here in California, can you tell me what this whole movement is about? Why so many religious people got up and spoke at this company meeting?
Mm-hmm. For well over 25 years, religious shareholders have found themselves as very concerned about issues in society. This really came from understanding ourselves as part owners of companies and realizing, coming out of the Vietnam War, when many of our pension funds had stock in Dow Chemical, and we needed to, you know, they were making napalm, and how could Christian churches, you know, justify that kind of ownership or that corporate behavior or that their participation in that. And so in 1970, we had a church group who filed a very momentous, their first shareholder resolution before General Motors. And in 1971, in the spring, that resolution was presented before the shareholders asking the company to leave South Africa. And it was at that moment where Dr. Leon Sullivan stood up, walked away from the rest of the board of directors. He was a director of General Motors at the time, and voted for the churches and said, we have to do something about this. Since then, since 1971, we've been working on a variety of human rights, peace, environment and equality issues, international health issues, international debt, domestic debt, credit issues, asking companies to look at the ethical ramifications of their behaviors.
It seems that this is busy shareholding. It seems that this is busy stockholder meeting month. Mm-hmm. You were racing around town. 2 weeks ago, you were at the General Electric shareholders meeting. Where was that?
Last week, we were in Cleveland. There were five of us from the New York area who had a couple of shareholder resolutions regarding PCB contamination in the Hudson River. And there was also another resolution that the church groups had on foreign military sales and ethical criteria regarding the sale of weapons on the open market. The week before that, we were at J.P. Morgan regarding the criteria of their international lending. We are hoping that debt crises that have been a part of us for years now, and very, very serious since Thailand and Asia collapsed, and now we've seen Russia, that we need our banks and private lending institutions to look at ways that they can avoid future debt crises.
You just mentioned J.P. Morgan, which made me think of J.P. Stevens. And in having talked to you before, that was the first shareholder meeting that you ever attended, right, more than two decades ago.
That's right. That was in 1977. And both Protestant denominations and religious Catholic congregations of women and men were very much involved in the labor issue there. And the perspective that I have is in those days we were concerned about labor practices of companies and the conditions of factories and people, the wage issues, and that was still here in the United States, where the mills in the Northeast had moved to the South because it was cheaper for the companies. And since then, now, as you know, we are very concerned about the sweatshop issue throughout the world and the need for independent monitoring and sustainable wages.
In fact, J.P. Stevens became notorious in Guatemala years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
So from J.P. Stevens, where else did you bring your shareholder activism?
In terms of a global standard of labor conditions, in terms of the sweatshop issue, we're negotiating with Nike and Reebok, and then also the companies that really mass produce and get the Walmarts and the Kmarts. This year, Walmart won at the Securities Exchange Commission, so our shareholder resolution is not before Walmart. I think it's also interesting to note that a few years ago, General Motors had been the largest employer in this country, and certainly their employees in this country, because of the unions, could afford the cars that they built. Today, Walmart is the largest employer in this country, and many of their employees are part-time employees and have not necessarily any benefits. They also work for minimum wage.
Sister Pat Daly of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, which is based in New York, standing outside of Chevron headquarters yesterday after their annual shareholders meeting. When we return, we'll hear from some of the people who testified at the shareholder meeting supporting shareholder resolutions calling for disclosure of Chevron's list of toxic chemicals, calling for them to be more responsible when it comes to the issue of global climate change. And after we hear from them, we're going to Los Angeles to hear about what the UWA will be doing at the Occidental Petroleum shareholders meeting tomorrow. You're listening to Pacific Radio's Democracy Now. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers, as we take on the issue of shareholder responsibility and corporations answering to their stockholders. Again, yesterday I flew out to San Ramon, California, to the headquarters of Chevron for their annual shareholders meeting. And there were a number of people there speaking to the issue of social responsibility on the part of the corporation Chevron. Afterwards, I had a chance to speak with them about the resolutions they supported.
Greg Karras with Communities for a Better Environment. I was honored to move the resolution for the shareholder groups. It was number three in brief real terms for our right to know how much dioxin and other pollution is released from all Chevron's facilities and our right to know what are the options for preventing that pollution. The outcome was we pointed out that the management had not provided the information and their policies had not asked them to change their position. They remained opposed. They announced a vote of 74% of stocks reporting voted against it. That means roughly 28% voted for it, which is astronomical, and it was about $120 billion of stock voted for this proposal.
Mm-hmm. And explain where this proposal had come from.
The community and the problem of oil companies and oil refineries, including Chevron facilities, producing dioxin, the most toxic food chain and reproductive and cancer-causing pollutant known to science, and covering up that pollution and not doing anything about it, and getting government agencies to help them, like the EPA, which has today still never required companies to report how much dioxin they release. We know it's coming from the refineries because there's a gradient from 100 miles away up to Chevron's doorstep showing the closer you get, the higher the concentration. And we know it's in our bodies and it's causing health effects in many species, including humans, some people who eat fish from the bay, mostly people of color in the Bay Area and elsewhere. So it came from the community, and CBE helped draft it with religious shareholders and others 2 years ago.
That's Communities for a Better Environment.
That's correct. Communities for a Better Environment helped draft it with religious shareholders and other shareholders 2 years ago. This is the second year for the resolution, and I've never seen 28% of the votes cast in favor of these types of resolutions against management's recommendation at oil companies who tend to own almost half the stock to themselves. Mm-hmm.
Henry Clark, you're with the West County Toxics Coalition.
That's correct.
You also supported this resolution. What does it mean for your community? And describe your community.
Well, I live in North Richmond. The community that's on the front line of the chemical assault, as we say, in Richmond, adjacent to the Chevron refinery, where we're bombarded by the daily toxic emissions from the refinery, the recent explosion, and people in our community fish in the polluted waters that Chevron discharge into, and where the dioxins are discharged in the runoff from the refinery. That includes dioxins affect the marine life, the fish and wildlife there. And we're hit hardest in every way as a community. And we were here today to support the resolution on dioxins because we feel that although Chevron give lip service to protecting the environment and want to work with our communities, when it come down to some material support or material action, the company does not take any action. And it has been the community, the West County Toxics Coalition, primarily leading the charge that have advocated the primary environmental measures that this company lays claim to as their forte for environmental protection. So it doesn't seem like the company has learned the lesson to learn from the community, to learn from us in a more receptive way now, only after the fact, after, you know, a lot of protests and demonstrations and a lot of attending these stockholder meetings, that they finally come around to seeing it the way that the community had told them initially, and then they want to take all the credit for it. Hopefully they'll get to the point where they'll be a little more proactive and listen when we come to them without a long, drawn-out struggle.
But on this resolution, they're against the community's right to know, to expose every single toxic chemical that they use. They say it's just too unwieldy. They have thousands of plants around the country, and they don't want to add to the amount of information that they have to give to the government at this point.
Well, that's the problem that our communities are dealing with this company for since 1980 plus when our organization started. We believe that we have a right to know every chemical that the Chevron refinery is releasing into our community. Any chemicals that can pose a health threat to us, we believe that we have a right to know. We did not give Chevron any permission to poison us with a range of deadly toxic chemicals, and we not have the right to know about it. This company is making profits at our expense, at the health of our people, at the lives of our people in our community, and we have a right to know what chemicals they're being released into the environment, dioxin included. We have a right to hold this company accountable to monitoring those chemicals, and we have a right to protect our health and safety. And it's nonsense. It makes no difference to us how many companies that facilities that Chevron have and how many chemicals that they are releasing into the environment. They need to keep track of them, and they need to let us know whether they're at safe levels or not, and we need to sit down and discuss that information. We have a right to know. Our lives are at stake. These corporate officials like Mr. Durr and others, they don't live around the refinery and the facilities where they're poisoning people at. We do.
Amy, I'd like to add one other fact. It's Greg Karras with CBE. Kinder's response, part of his response, was really troubling, and I want to just quickly note something about it. He claimed that government agencies are agreeing with Chevron that they're not a significant cause of dioxin pollution. As I said, the facts tell a different story. He then blamed the pollution on the public and on people's cars. In fact, the Chevron refinery in Southern California, the diesel fuel and the motor oil coming straight out of the refinery before it ever got in a car was tested by UC Riverside. And they found dioxin and dioxin precursor chemicals in those products. So the refineries are the source of at least part, if not all, of whatever amounts coming out of tailpipes. And I just wanted to comment that with those facts in mind, it starts to look like Chevron is blaming the victim.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Greg, this 28 or 25% vote for the resolution, even though it was defeated, what does it mean practically? What can that allow you to do?
Well, it means two things, I think, for sure. One is that the resolution can come back next year. Two, it means for sure that there's a certain amount of economic power. We calculated roughly $120 billion in shares voted, which is money that I presume matters even to the likes of a corporate management that's irresponsible in other ways. Couple of things that might happen. There may, because of that, be negotiations before the next shareholders meeting if the company management becomes more responsible. And if that does not happen, there may be a very large, very rowdy, and very effective protest at the next shareholders meeting.
I would just add to that I'm Sister Teresa Marie from the Sisters of the Holy Family, and I,
which is based where?
We were founded in San Francisco, and we're based majorly. The major amount of our sisters are in the Bay Area, working and ministering with the people. And one of the things that Kinder did promise us a number of years ago was a sit-down dialogue around these issues. He's never done that. We have, you know, it. Every time we get to the point of it. Is a possibility, it gets closed down and it doesn't happen. So it's something that this maybe will cause the company to look at seriously and start some dialogue around it.
Can you say what you said in support of this resolution?
Yes, I support this resolution because I want them to look at the amount of dioxins that are coming out of the companies and polluting the airways and polluting the lives of poor people who can't speak for themselves. And I also want them to start to look at alternatives, because there are alternatives available to us for less toxic or no toxic alternatives to the dioxins.
Do you find Chevron a responsive company?
This is my first encounter. It was my first meeting as a shareholder meeting. I would say that it was amazing to me how many religious were responding with proposals and or up to speak, and that makes me very proud. But it also says there's a lot of work to be done with Chevron.
What are the effects you see of dioxin in the community where you work?
Probably cancer is the highest effect that you see, and I think probably I didn't realize till today when I looked at the paper that that Greg gave us that diabetes is also an effect, and diabetes I know in our community is very high, and that, I don't know whether that has is an effect of it or not, but that is one of the things that is caused.
Sister Ann McMullen with the Sisters of St. Joseph, the learning disabilities among children is also seen to be one, and here in Richmond there is a school that's very close, and as Sister Teresa Marie was just telling me, it ranks one of the lowest in the area educationally.
What is a sister like you doing in a place like this, Chevron headquarters?
One of the things that we realize is that as we work, and also as we get older as communities, that one of the ways of continuing our mission of working for people and continuing to promote health care and human rights and education rights for children is to use the powers that we do have of any monies we have, and here we happen to use our retirement funds, in order to vote resolutions that take out stock in companies that we feel need to be challenged to work for the community. And so we take out stock and try to voice our concerns with hopes of changing some of the policies so that it betters the community at large.
Now, what if you do, if God forbid, you profit off of the suffering, the very kind of policies that you are protesting?
What we do is take minimum stock. We do not take maximum stock. We take what we need in order to file a resolution.
My name is Sister Susan Vickers. I spoke to the resolution on greenhouse gas emissions. And I spoke as a representative of the Congregation of Sisters of Charity of the Incarnate Word, Houston, Texas. The congregation, as well as myself personally, think that global warming and climate change is the primary environmental issue facing us at this point and into the next century, and poses such a grave threat to our own health and well-being and the continued health and well-being of the human family and our planet, that we need to find ways to work together to address these issues. And I have no doubt that the science on the issue is credible enough to warrant taking preventive action at this point.
And what does the resolution specifically call for?
The resolution asks for a report to shareholders that would cover several items. First of all, specific actions of the company to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Secondly, the financial exposure of the company and its shareholders to the likely costs of reducing those emissions and potential liability for damages associated with climate change. And finally, actions by the company or industry associations to which it pays dues, promoting the view that the issue of climate change is exaggerated or not a real threat.
Kender responded and said he, as a U.S. citizen and also as the head of Chevron, sees the Kyoto proposal as anti-American.
I think that Mr. Durr is sadly misguided in that opinion, and I think it's very unfortunate that he is promoting that view as well as the view that there is not reputable science that would indicate, not that it's conclusive, not that we know exactly what would happen, but definitely that there's a very grave threat that demands concerted action at this point.
At the stockholder meeting today, I raised the issue with the chairman that the company is involved in a lot of industry-funded organizations that are working to undermine the science and undermine the public understanding of what's going on with global warming. In particular, I brought up the fact that they have produced a video that they're circulating across the country to science teachers so that they can use it with their children to teach them about global warming. And it specifically says in there that global warming is not, the science behind global warming is not conclusive enough to merit action.
If people want to get in touch with the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, where can they call?
They can call in New York, 212-870-2295.
One more time?
212-870-2295.
And what kind of information can they get?
They can get not only the information regarding the church-sponsored shareholder resolutions. This year we have sponsored more than 150 resolutions before about 120 companies. But they also can get information regarding many of our issues as well as just socially responsible investing in general. This is not just for church pension funds. This is for public pension funds and any investor, even if you just have a checking account or a savings account someplace, you're connected with a lending institution that is having an influence in that community or maybe around the world. As consumers, even if we have no investment or have no savings accounts, just as consumers, we could be making choices in terms of what to buy and how our choices of purchasing can really affect many, many people.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Sister Pat Daly of the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, as well as other religious people and community activists, speaking yesterday outside of the Chevron annual shareholders meeting that took place at their San Ramon headquarters just outside of San Francisco. When we come back, you'll hear from some other people who are going to a shareholders meeting, the UA of Colombia, who will be attending the meeting of Occidental Petroleum in Los Angeles tomorrow. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we move from Northern California, the Chevron annual shareholders meeting, to the south, moving to the Occidental Petroleum shareholders meeting that's taking place in Los Angeles, and to Colombia. We'll talk today about the oil giant's plans to drill in the ancestral land of the UA people. Just a few years ago, in April of 1995, the UA made headlines around the world when they pledged to commit mass suicide if Occidental proceeded with its oil project in the Zamora block, which is located on their traditional territories. Legal battles followed, and the UA took their struggle to the public, to Occidental shareholders, and to the Organization of American States. Now, as Occidental waits for final approval for a drilling license from Colombia's Ministry of the Environment, the UA have taken their struggle to Los Angeles, where Occidental is holding its annual shareholders meeting tomorrow. There, they plan to confront Occidental's top executives, including the CEO, chair and board of directors, and to ask investors to back a resolution calling for a study of the potential effects an oil drilling project would have on their land. We're joined right now by three people, two in our Pacifica station KPFK studio in Los Angeles. Aruna Nomina is with us, also known by his Spanish name Roberto Perez. He's the newly elected president of the UA Traditional Authority, in Spanish known as the Cabildo Mayor. We're also joined by Shannon Wright, director of the Beyond Oil Campaign for the Rainforest Action Network, and Atossa Soltani, executive director of Amazon Watch. She worked closely with Terence Freitas, who was one of three people killed in Colombia last month with two other activists, Ingrid Washnuatak and Lahina Gay, when they were working on a project with the UA. Atossa Soltani has worked with the Dominican shareholders, outreach to top 10 shareholders. Atossa, welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Can you tell us about the shareholder meeting and what are the plans for tomorrow?
The annual shareholders meeting is happening at the Civic Auditorium here in Santa Monica tomorrow. And since about November of last year, we've been working with the Sinsinawa Dominicans, who are shareholders of Oxy, in drafting a resolution that directs Occidental to prepare a risk analysis, independent study of the risks associated with this project in the event, especially on long-term profitability, from the threat of a mass suicide. And this is a way to put the agenda on the attention of the shareholders. And so the resolution was actually, Terrence Freitas had worked with the Sinsinawa Dominicans to draft this resolution. Tomorrow, this resolution is going to be considered at the annual meeting. So there are plans to have a press briefing at 9:30 a.m. outside, and then a number of shareholders will be going inside to address the management and the shareholders of Oxy.
Aruna Nomina, can you tell us what you plan to say tomorrow? And Aruna Nomina will be translated by Shannon Wright. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
Mire, nosotros pensamos a entrar en la reunión anual que se realiza aquí en Los Ángeles.
We are planning to go into the annual shareholder meeting, which is going to be held here in Los Angeles tomorrow.
Y presentar nuestra posición ante los accionistas petroleras.
And let our position be known to the shareholders of the oil company.
En Los Ángeles, una vez más, reafirmar el mensaje del pueblo indígena UAS.
And let them know one more time and reaffirm the message of the UA people of Colombia.
Porque nosotros sabemos que aquí es la es el aquí es la cabeza mayor.
Because we know that this is really the headquarters where the top head is.
Y mañana es el momento que nosotros podemos expresar.
And tomorrow is the moment when we can really express
ante los accionistas petroleros aquí en Los Ángeles.
That we can really say what we need to say to them, to the shareholders.
Y toda la problema petrolera que sean causados en nuestros territorios.
And talk about all of the petroleum problems that are being caused in our traditional lands.
Y dar al conocer al país y al mundo.
And just let the country and the whole world know.
El impacto ambiental.
The environmental impact.
Que deja con la explotación petrolera.
That petroleum exploration
en Colombia o en otros
Colombia,
países del mundo.
And in other countries throughout the world.
You're listening
como
to
pueblo,
Aruna Namina.
Como pueblo,
as the UA people,
pensamos diferente lo que está pensando la Oxy.
We are thinking in a different way than Occidental is.
Nosotros tenemos nuestra propia pensamiento.
We have our own way of thinking.
Con nuestra propia costumbres.
With our own customs.
Con nuestra propia cultura.
With our own culture.
Y con nuestra propia tradición y con nuestra propia filosofía.
And our own traditions and philosophy,
naturaleza.
Which is really based on nature.
Asimismo queremos conocer de aquí en Los Ángeles una vez más reafirmar nuestra posición.
This way, for this reason we want to make known one more time here in Los Angeles our position.
Que la Occidental que cancele todas las actividades petroleras en nuestros territorios del pueblo UA.
And that Occidental must cancel all of their petroleum activities on the ancestral lands of the UA people.
Porque para nosotros no es un desarrollo.
Because for us this is not development.
Para nosotros es una destrucción ambiental.
For us it's an environmental destruction.
Porque la ley de nosotros
because our law
Es muy diferente que maneje el gobierno y que maneje la occidental.
Our law is very different than the law that Occidental and the government follow.
Nuestro Sira, que es nuestro Dios, nos dejó es para conservar y no es para explotar.
Our God Sira put us here not to exploit, but to protect.
En ningún momento nosotros no estamos pensando en llegar ni a acuerdo ni a hacer el convenio para la exploración y explotación petrolera en territorios indígenas que está ubicado en el departamento de Norte Santander y Santander, Boyacá, Arauca y Casanare. Eso se llama el Bloque Zamoré.
We are not thinking in any way to come to some sort of agreement or negotiation about this petroleum project that's based in the many different provinces, Boyacá, Santander, and Arauca of Colombia.
You're listening to Aruna Nómina, known by his Spanish name, Roberto Pérez, who is the newly elected president of the UWA Traditional Authority. Go ahead, Aruna, with what you were saying.
Adelante, sí.
Para nosotros significa que es un petróleo. El petróleo es la sangre de nuestra madre tierra.
For us, petroleum is the blood of Mother Earth.
Porque al llegar el momento de explotar el petróleo, da la muerte, la vida de nuestra madre.
At the moment of exploiting petroleum, it is to give death to Mother Earth.
Porque para nosotros la tierra es mi mamá.
Because for us, the earth is my mother.
Sin ella, yo no puedo vivir aquí.
Without her, I cannot live here.
Yo creo que ni el mismo gobierno, porque todo estamos viviendo con ella.
I don't think the government can either, because we all must live with her.
Y sin agua, no hay vida.
Without water, there's no life.
El agua es fuente de vida de todo de la sociedad.
Water is really the source of life of all society.
No solamente el Colombia, sino toda una fuente de vida del mundo.
Not just Colombia, but all over the world.
The threat a few years ago, Aruna Nómina, of the UWA people, of your people, to commit mass suicide, unfortunately, seems to be the only thing that got international attention. And now you all have threatened this again, if in fact Occidental does drill on your land. How serious is this threat this time?
Amy, I'll just jump in here and just let you know. I'll go ahead and translate to him. But one thing that the UWA people, this is Shannon Wright speaking, that they often say is oftentimes at this point they don't like to talk very much about the suicide threat because their elders have said that in some ways it's invoking, it's like calling it on, and that they feel that they have many options now because they've had such a strong international response. So that's one thing to just think about in his response. He might not go into much detail.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking about the UWA people and Occidental Petroleum. They have been having an ongoing battle in Colombia, battle in the sense that the UWA people have been fighting Occidental Petroleum's efforts to drill on their land. And now the newly elected president of the UWA is in Los Angeles to attend tomorrow's annual shareholder meeting of Occidental Petroleum and to address the CEO. Aruna Nómina.
Mire, no vengo aquí a hablar del subsidio.
You see, I haven't come here to talk about the collective suicide.
Sino que venimos a exigir al gobierno.
But we have come here to demand that the government
que nos respete
and respects us.
Lo que es nuestro derecho milenario, ancestral, que hemos vivido en nuestro territorio, sin ningún clase de problemas. Anteriormente, nosotros hemos vivido en paz.
Our own right to live in our ancestral way and in peace as we have previously.
Pero después de aparecer en 1993 con el proyecto petrolero,
but since 1993, when the petroleum project showed up,
ya es muy diferente.
Everything has changed.
Porque ya va a haber un problema grande para no solamente para los indígenas, va a presentar un problema para la sociedad colombiana.
And there's going to be a problem not just for the indigenous people, but for the whole Colombian society.
Y yo pienso que ya es el momento.
And I think that it's the moment now.
El gobierno colombiano que haga un reconocimiento sobre un derecho ancestral y patrimonial, lo que es lo que nosotros estamos reclamando.
And I think it's time that the government acknowledge our ancestral right that we are demanding.
Y ahí donde quiero decir muy claramente aquí, el gobierno colombiano no es el dueño de la riqueza, no es el dueño del subsuelo colombiano. Somos los dueños. Los indígenas no es el gobierno, ni la occidental.
Yes, and so I want to say that it's not the government or Occidental that are the owners of the subsurface of the ground. It's the indigenous people that have always lived there.
Shannon Wright, I wanted to end by asking you about the Beyond Oil campaign of the Rainforest Action Network and what is happening around the country right now.
Well, as you know, this is an international week of action for the Uwa people. In addition to all of the shareholder activism that will be going on tomorrow, here in Los Angeles yesterday, the Uwa participated in a march with over 200 citizens and activists right to Occidental Petroleum's headquarters. There was also 25 arrests of nonviolent protesters in solidarity with the Uwa people. In addition to that, you'll see tomorrow at all of the consulates across the United States, there will be protest supporting the Uwa, demanding that the Colombian government cancel the project as the Uwa are demanding and turn back over to them their full land rights. You also will see additional protests and meetings with Occidental and with the Colombian government and embassies around the world, including in Bogota. So we're really seeing an outpouring of support for the Uwa people, both as a response to their ongoing campaign and their strong position of a clear articulation that they are opposed to this project and don't want to negotiate, and also people that learned about the Uwa's plight through the death of Terry Ingrid and Lahey last month.
Shannon Wright, finally, a quick phone number if people want to get in touch with the Uwa campaign.
You're welcome to call Rainforest Action Network. Our 1-800 number is 1-800-989-RAIN. If you're in the Los Angeles area, you can also call Amazon Watch, 310-456-1340.
Thank you very much, Shannon Wright of the Beyond Oil Campaign of the Rainforest Action Network, and Aruna Nomina, who is the newly elected president of the Uwa Traditional Authority. And as we weave this show together, we go back to the words of the CEO of the Chevron Corporation. Again, Chevron facilitating the killing of two Nigerian activists last year. This was his response at his shareholders meeting yesterday.
But have you officially demanded that they not shoot protesters on your site?
I don't know if we've officially demanded it, but I think it's good without saying that nobody...
Will you officially demand it?
No. I mean, it's ridiculous.
If you'd like a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Errol Maitland's our technical director, Roy Hurst in Los Angeles. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Confusion every day.